Hello and welcome to the MFC Podcast. Today in the latest special of the MFC Podcast, myself and Scott McClure are delighted to welcome along former Motherwell midfielder Mark Fitzpatrick. Mark, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, no worries. Looking forward to it.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to go over your career at Fir Park and beyond. And what I'm going to do just now is I'll start at your debut, a game towards the end of the 2003-2004 season against Celtic. Not much bigger an occasion, Celtic at Fir Park, to make your debut. What was your feelings and emotions in that day?
I think it was like anybody. I was absolutely petrified, but like absolutely delighted, obviously, to come on against Celtic, one of the biggest teams, and just to have my debut against them was something quite special, and at Fir Park. And I was just nerves. I think that's the overwhelming thing you have when you're making a debut. You kind of sit on the bench and you kind of have that anticipation of going on the park, and it's eventually there. It's like, it's massive. But I don't really remember much about it. I remember coming on and touch tackling somebody, just as usual. And after that, I was sweeping the changing rooms, and it was just how it was. Do you know what I mean? It was like back into my suit, but I was in sweeping up the changing rooms afterwards. And that's just what it was like.
I was looking at the starting 11 for that game. It wasn't a particularly experienced team. So who was the kind of leaders in the dressing room at that point?
Well, I can't remember the starting team either, who was on the park. But obviously, you had Scott Leach at the time. You had Gordon Marshall. I don't know if it was Derek Adams. Was he there that year? Maybe he might have been away. Marty Corrigan and Craggs. So you had kind of big characters there, and you had older guys, older experienced guys, as well as all the kind of youth, all the kind of young players like Clarke and Coach and all these kind of boys that were coming through at the time. I think it was a real good balance in the changing room. I was 17 or just turned 18. It was because I think I must have been 17. It was a massive moment because my family were all Celtic fans, and it was a big moment for them. And then I made my start the next week against Hearts, the last game of the season, my full debut, and then again that was something really special.
If you kind of follow into the next season, you picked up where you left off. You became pretty much a mainstay in the first team. So you've got the wee taster of it towards the end of the previous season, and then you've been able to make that progression. That must have been very satisfying for a young guy making his way in the game, that you had shown what you could do, and Terry Butcher then took that trust and put that faith in you.
It was, and I remember, I think it was that pre-season, I still was with the youth team, and the first team, I think, went up to Inverness, and they were staying over, and they were having a night out and things like that. And the youth team were just travelling up to Ross County, playing a game and going back down, just on the minibus. And I was with them. So I wasn't really... But that was my last time that I stayed with the youth team. And I don't know if it was something changed then, if I showed a good attitude, or what it was that Terry Butcher then took me in and brought me into the first team fold. And from then on, that was me in training with the first team every week and kind of becoming more of a part of it. And I don't know what, I think when I was younger, I was fit, and I think Butcher liked that he could rely on me to work hard, and I played left midfield most of the time, and his team, the left and right midfielders, had to work extremely hard because it was an absolute graveyard shift playing a kind of 4-4-2. You had to get up and down all day, and I think that was a big part of my fitness, and my willingness was a big part of me kind of staying in the first team at that age.
He's obviously a legendary character in the game, Terry Butcher. The hairdryer treatment seemed to be something that he operated with, but I've spoken to a lot of players that played in that team, and he said that his ability to kind of put an arm around someone and guide them as well, his man-to-man management was second to none for so many players.
Well, I think definitely. I mean, he never went through me I don't ever remember getting that treatment, so he kind of knew, I think, who he could do it with, and he maybe didn't do it with the younger ones. He didn't have it across the board. That was his attitude. He just roasted people, and that was him. I mean, he gave boys absolute pelters, and especially centre halves. I mean, the centre halves absolutely tortured. Big Partridge and Craggs used to get dogs abuse off him, but it was obviously because of what he was and his own standards that he wanted it off his centre halves. But it was never like that with me. I don't ever remember getting roasted, because I don't know if I would have handled it that well at that age. And I think he probably knew that. And that's kind of testament to his kind of man management. He just kind of let the young ones on with it. I don't ever remember feeling any pressure or anything like that to have to go out and perform. That was on the older ones, and that's kind of how it should be. It should be the younger ones should be left to try and find their own feet, and the older ones are there to kind of stand up when it's to be counted.
I could imagine his relationship, did he have many run-ins with Scott Leach? I'd imagine them two would have, Scott in the dressing room would be quite opinionative, and were they two loggerheads, or was it mainly the centre half, as you said?
I don't ever remember MD standing up to him and having a go back at him. I think there was a few moments in the change room with the players between ourselves. There was a few characters, a few big characters, and there was a Leach, as you said, was a dominant character. He was a captain, and everybody respected him, and he could put his opinions across. But I don't ever remember MD kind of standing up to even David Partridge, who was an absolute beast. Do you know what I mean? When the gaffer, when Terry Butcher gave it to him, he kind of sat and took it, and I think that was just the respect that everybody had for him. I don't remember. I might be wrong, but I don't ever remember MD kind of going and challenging him. I think everybody had too much respect and just let him have his rant and have his say.
That first full season obviously brought what's regarded as in Mamadou lifetime, I think, is one of the best moments I've witnessed. Certainly the semi-final against Hearts at Tynecastle at Easter Road. You came on at 75 minutes. At that point, it's 1-0. We go 2-0 ahead through Richie Foran's penalty, and then the last 5 minutes, it's disaster. Mark Burchell scores. Then Thorn-Arneson, who I had to actually Google, I couldn't remember who had scored the equalising goal. But anyway, luckily that didn't matter. The final minute of extra time, you played through. You can kind of talk us through the rest, but what's the feeling when the ball lands at your feet and you've still got another 60 yards to the goal, but you showed remarkable composure. It's an amazing finish, and the scenes after it are just, it's bedlam.
No, the overriding thing is about that moment is that I didn't have anything in my mind. It was the strangest feeling, because I was never the most composed person on the park, especially in front of goal. I mean, I've not got a great goal scoring record, but I don't know if that moment, Scotty played the ball through, and the best thing about the whole goal was my touch, because I think everybody thinks Scotty's ball was good, but Scotty's ball was a bit of a shocker, and it was like chipped up, and I had to kind of pull it out the air, and it's probably one of the best touches I've ever had, and that was the best part about the whole goal. But I don't remember, I think if I'd thought about it, I'd have crumbled, I'd have taken a bad touch, or something would have happened. But I just remember, before I knew it, I was in front of goal and just thought, I shoot here, and it just happened. And it was a strange feeling. After it, it was just crazy, and something I didn't really appreciate at the time, but now I appreciate it. Like, it comes up on Twitter all the time, and people talk about it, and it fills me with pride, because it's a part of like Motherwell's history that I managed to become. And but the run up to the goal, I just remember being, it's a total blackout. It was just as if instincts took over or something, and it's crazy, because about 2 weeks before, I missed an open goal at Easter Road against Hibs. It was literally, the ball got cut back to me 6 yards out, and it hit my heel and went wide. And then the next 2 weeks later, I saw him, I'm doing that. So I don't know, it was just kind of in the stars a wee bit.
It was unbelievable from a fan's point of view. I remember even before the game, I can remember me and my dad ran a bus getting in and being in the, it was kind of strange being in a neutral venue for a semi-final, but it was a kind of usual Motherwell roller coaster. Your emotions are there, you've got you're thinking about how you're going to get to the cup final, and then as Andy said, you've got the last 5 minutes and then you think, right, this is it, we're going to get beat, we're going to, it's going to go to penalties and Hearts are going to get through and it's going to be the same old. And I honestly, a bit like yourself, it's a bit of a blur. I can remember exactly where I was in the stadium, but it is one of the moments that it's definitely up there with my all-time favourite games to go to, especially the way we won it. And as you say, it comes up on Twitter, and even every time I watch it, you get the goosebumps, and I would imagine that every Motherwell fan is the same. So it must be every Motherwell fan must talk to you about it, Mark. And honestly, it's up there with the Craig Reid against Aberdeen and the playoff games for Rangers. For me, it was absolutely brilliant. Just a pity we never won the final.
Well, that's that. I mean, that was kind of the big moment of that run, with what happened in the final. But as you say, it was just the game. It was just how it happened. We were in total dominance. Come on, it 1-0, went to 2-0, you're hanging absolutely cushy, and then it happens at the end, and they were a decent side. I mean, Paul Hartley was kind of at the top of his powers at the time, and I remember Leachie and Marshall being, big Marshall and Goles, being absolutely brilliant that day, like, just covering every blade of grass, and Leachie was like a pure warrior in the middle of the park, and just the way it happened was crazy. And fans do come up to me and talk about it, or if ever I'm bump into people in the pub or whatever and they talk about it, and to be honest, I'll never get sick of it, because it was brilliant to us, and something that I'm quite proud that I managed to achieve. It's something that not everybody gets a chance to kind of put their foot down in a club's kind of history type thing, but I did with that goal. It was just a pity the final was a bit of a washout.
Yeah, we'll briefly touch on the final, but you did score another goal against Hearts a couple of weeks later. You were making a bit of a knack of scoring against Hearts. But the final, there was a lot of build-up, but it had been 14 years since our last major cup final. Obviously, the circumstances of how we had got to the final as well were... I think that built up the hysteria a wee bit. It felt like it was maybe written in the stars that the Motherwell were going to go on and win the cup. It didn't transpire like that. It was pretty much done by half time, I think. And was it the case that perhaps that the build up, and because it was quite unusual, I guess, it was billed as a David Cooper final. There was a lot of press around the club, which maybe some players weren't used to.
It might have been the case. Obviously, I wasn't involved, and not being involved at a cup final like that, mind you, again, so I don't know how other clubs work, but the week before, it was a big deal with people coming in talking to us, like, just things were happening that would never usually happen for a normal game. So whether that was a factor in what happened on the pitch, it might have been, maybe if it's by the time again, I don't know what the club done for the cup finals recently, but that big massive build up taking off one game, maybe it did overwhelm a lot of boys that had never been there and probably never went there again, and it might have been a factor. But Rangers were some team, and a couple of mistakes early on, and it kind of got away from us, but it could have been a factor that the boy John Gagan, he came in and spoke to us, and we had a motivational talk during the week, and all just different things that just wouldn't have happened for a normal game of football, and it might have. But I just remember playing every game up to the final, but not the final, because I think Leachie and Phil were like resting their legs for the final, so I get playing near enough every game up to it, and then get binned, which is part and parcel of being the young boy, I think, at the time.
Yeah, what was it like in terms of coming out? And I know you obviously didn't start the game, but seeing all these supporters as well, because you would be used to the kind of 4,000 or 5,000 at Fir Park every week, and then you suddenly see 16,000 Motherwell fans. You're thinking, where did they come from, first and foremost? But the atmosphere and everything created by that must have been so unusual.
Was, I mean, even before it, when we were getting on the bus to go in, like, all our families were there, and they all got a bus for the club put on and getting in, and you just knew about the whole buzz about the place the full week, and the place was deserted. But when we got there, and I remember not being disappointed that I wasn't starting the game, because I didn't expect to start the game, so I wasn't overly disappointed, because I knew myself that I wasn't going to be starting. But when we came out and the boys lined up for just before they shook hands or whatever, I remember being gutted, because the atmosphere was brilliant, and it's something that I was gutted that I wasn't really part of. Obviously I was on the bench, but I wasn't one of the starting 11 kind of out there experiencing it on the field at the time. And by the time I came on, I think it was 4-1, and it was a token gesture really to come on.
Yeah, that season was obviously an up and down one. That you had the cup final, obviously finishing the season with the game against Celtic as well, which is another day that I guess will go down in legend in terms of the drama on that one. You move on to the following season, and you only made 10 appearances. Was that a bit frustrating after having such a strong breakthrough season?
I think so. I mean, obviously, you want to play more, and I don't know really the circumstances behind not playing as much. I don't know if injuries played a part and things like that, but I think I still didn't feel like I was established in the first team. Even after that first season, I didn't feel like I'd established myself. I still felt like kind of a young one that I had to kind of force myself into it and got my game wherever I could manage it if somebody was injured or whatever, and try to make my way that way. I didn't really feel like I'd earned it yet. And it was kind of one of these seasons where it was what it was. You know what I mean? I didn't play as many as I would have hoped or wanted to, but it's not easy to play at that level. And you've got a lot of good players you need to try and displace.
Were you ever close to getting out on loan anywhere during that kind of time where you weren't making as many appearances?
It was never. Now I think about it now, and I think all the boys go out on loan, and it's great, but it was never a thing for me. I never asked, and I was never approached by the club to do it. I don't know if it was because I was kind of useful, because I was kind of a utility player. I could play in a kind of three different positions. So with a small squad at the time, it was handy to have me about, so they wouldn't have wanted to get rid of me. But I think, looking back in hindsight, I think I would have benefited definitely if I'd gone out on loan and playing a kind of full season somewhere, or at least challenging to be a starter every week for a team in a kind of war league or whatever. But it was something that never ever came up for me, and I don't feel as if it was as big a deal back then. I don't think a lot of boys went out on loan as much as they do now, especially for youth teams and things like that. Our youth team boys never went out on loan anywhere. It was like, if you'd done well, you were kind of in the first team squad, and the first team squad was that small that the club couldn't afford for you to go anywhere.
The following season, you managed to make your way back in, but just before I go on to that, obviously at the end of 2005-2006, Terry Butcher took up a job in Australia, departed the club. He was the guy that gave you your opportunity in the game. Do you feel that you owe a lot of gratitude to Terry Butcher?
Oh, definitely, because it was great for me, and it obviously gave me my debut, and I think everybody kind of appreciates the manager that Kevin gave him that breakthrough. And still, when I seen him recently, when I was went part time and I was working in the airport, I seen him and chatting away, I still kind of felt that kind of aura, like that kind of awe of him. I thought he was a great manager, and it was a big loss, as you've seen what happened the season after, you know what I mean, to the club. And It was it was a shame that he kind of left, but you can understand his decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, the following season under Maurice Malpass was a great deal more difficult. In terms of your own development, you played a lot more, but on the park, things were a real struggle, and it was a real close escape at the end, wasn't it? In terms of losing the St Mirren game, winning 2-0 up and looking like we're cruising, and then it just became a disaster, to be honest, in the second half. John Sutton puts one through Colin Meldrum's legs, and they got to win the game 3-2, but results went our way elsewhere, and somehow we managed to avoid the drop. Maurice Malpass was sacked, though, at the end of that season, and I think it would be fair to say that his step up from number two to the top job just didn't really work out.
I think it was a lot of things that season. I don't know if Mo just didn't have the kind of personality for it. I'm not sure, because when he was number two, he was quiet, but he had these boys that he liked, and it was more the Scotland boys like Hammy and Brian Kerr and things like that that he got on with, that kind of age group. But he never seemed to transition into being the manager, and he kind of went into himself a wee bit, and they brought in Paul Hegarty, and I think the two of them were quite similar, and just a lot of things that season. I mean, he brought in Ross McCormick, who the season after, I think, went on to do wonders, but Roscoe, I think, got a thyroid problem or something that season, and he wasn't right, and he wasn't living up to, I think, what the manager was hoping, and he kind of lost form, and we didn't really have anybody else that season to kind of drag us out of kind of trouble, and there's a lot of chopping and changing of the team and a lot of crisis meetings. And I think now, being in football as long, as soon as these crisis meetings start happening, it's a slippery slope down the way, and there was a lot of that going on at the club under Maurice and Paul Hegarty, and we were quite a young squad. I just don't think we could handle their style of management. I think maybe their management might be more suited to a kind of more robust, kind of older, experienced squad that could kind of look after themselves a wee bit. But I think we needed kind of like somebody to look after us.
I could totally agree with you with that, Mark, with Morrissey's kind of outlook. For me, when you talk through Mullerwell teams and stuff, Maurice Malpass era is probably one of the most depressing. But you look at it, and even when you're getting beat, you looked over to the dugout, and we're talking like Terry Butcher, or even at the current manager, Steve Robinson, and they get animated, and they're running down the touchline, and even when we score a goal, you see that they're celebrating. But I didn't get any of that back when Maurice Malpass was the manager. And I think that went into the stands, and we know what it's like at Firth Park. Quickly, the fans can turn really, really quick, and I think he was kind of running uphill the whole way, and just his lack of enthusiasm, and it was just, I don't know, just a poor time to watch Mullerwell. But I suppose the benefit for you was you got a lot of games. Was that kind of the season that you kind of developed more into the covering the left back with Stevie Hamill, because you seemed to kind of drift back to the midfield? Was that season?
Aye, it was more that season that I played left back in times, but it wasn't really a great season for me personally. I felt as if my confidence took a big dent that season, and I think everybody's was the same, just with the circumstances. I don't think just the way Morrissey's kind of management didn't really suit that type. It was, and as you say, when you've not got that kind of personality in the sideline, as soon as it's not going well, fans are going to turn on that. And that's kind of that was just his personality. Do you know what I mean? Not everybody's can be a Butcher or a Stevie Robinson and can show that emotion, and that was just his demeanour, and it was his demeanour in training. But I don't think it helped. I mean, it was all right as a number two, because you had Terry, who was passionate and full of life and gave you all the big speeches and all that kind of stuff, and Mo kind of bounced off that. Whereas I just think when Mo became manager and Paul Hegarty was assistant, they were quite similar and it just young team, just a lot of things happened, and it just happens in football. And as you say, the fans start getting on the back, and it doesn't help players in the park, doesn't help MD, but that's just football, because that's what it's all about.
Well, it's amazing how quickly things can turn around in football as well. And going into the following season, Mark McGee's appointed as manager. You personally, Mark, you made your most appearances that you did in one single season. And that season under Mark McGee, the team on the park were just superb. The brand of football was attacking. It was bringing goals. There's times, I can remember games like such as the Aberdeen game before Christmas that year, where it was 3-0 at half time and Aberdeen were lucky to have nothing. It was it looked like it could be any number that Motherwell wanted. The team were playing with that much confidence. Guys like, for instance, Ross McCormack, who hadn't been able to hit the heights in the previous season, was suddenly playing with a newfound belief. Guys like Chris Porter were added into the mix. Jim Patterson came back a different player. It was just so many elements, and they were all in song at the one time.
I mean, that's the type of thing when I'm talking about a wee bit of luck. Like, Mo brings in Ross McCormack, and he wasn't right physically and didn't really hit the height, so he didn't get that. But Mark McGee came in, and Roscoe was just unbelievable. And you had all the players around about it, but Mark McGee was, if he liked you, I don't know how people felt about him when you weren't in the team. But when he liked you and you were flying, you kind of felt like you were on top of the world type thing. And I think that's how Ross McCormack done so well. I think because he was kind of just treated as the best player, and he was the best player at that time, and he just confidence just grew and grew. But the fitness, that see the pre-season when Mark McGee first came in, was
done. Austria?
We went to Austria.
That was the one where, that another Flo, done his video diary, was that year?
I think it was the one Flo came, I know we went twice, and I think it was the first one that Flo came, and, but it was like triple sessions. We were up in the morning, and you were thinking we were up in the morning for a wee jog before breakfast, and you were getting absolutely battered, having breakfast, back out in the morning, having lunch, and then back out in the afternoon. It didn't matter if there was games or what, you were doing it, and I think he kind of brought in this first thing that it was like kind of a fat club, so your fat's taken, and if you weren't under it, you were doing sessions on the treadmill before training and things like that, and he just brought this kind of fitness, and I think that's why that kind of attack and free flowing came out, because we were that much fitter than a lot of teams, and we just ran over the top of them, and we had the players that could do it, and football-wise, I think that's probably the best team I've kind of been involved in at that level. We were just, as you say, the game against Aberdeen, and there was other games that season where we were just blowing teams away, and it was exciting times, it was. And Mark McGee's a big, big part in it, because he brought in boys like Chris Porter, who were brilliant. Stephen Hughes was great in the middle of the park, and it was good football.
That season as well, obviously tinged with great tragedy in terms of the loss of Phil O'Donnell. The impact that Phil made at Fir Park is unquestionable. His memory and his legacy still lives on around Scottish football, never mind just Motherwell Football Club. I don't obviously want to delve too deep here or anything like that, but the devastation was clearly felt across the football club, and to have been a teammate of Phil, and obviously to come through as a younger player and play alongside him, how much of an influence did Phil O'Donnell have in your career?
Like, I know every single person said it, but I'm going to say it as well. I mean, he was just the nicest guy you'll ever have met. Like, he was dead. He'd done that career. He'd been to Celtic, Sheffield Wednesday. Had a great career, made plenty of money, but it was like the most down-to-earth guy you could meet, and just would help MD. But I just think with Phil, I was never, ever, ever as good as Phil, obviously, but I kind of thought of myself as that kind of player when he was younger, and he was kind of all energy and he was kind of getting about, and he was just a role model. I mean, that season he was playing some unbelievable football, and it kind of rolled back the years a wee bit, and it was kind of an honour to share a change room with him and know him and kind of like be part of it. I mean, always looked up to him, and he was a great guy.
Well, the one thing that I took for, obviously it must have been horrendous being a teammate. It was bad enough being a supporter that you kind of grow up and you feel as if you know the players even though you don't. But just going back to kind of Mark McGee, I just think that the way that he conducted himself and looked as if he was the leader of the team. I mean, I just think that's my taking away the football side of things. The way that he spoke in the media at the time, it must have been really difficult. But I think he came across at that time as being absolutely brilliant. It's really unfortunate that Mark McGee, with a lot of Millwall fans now, probably maybe we as fans forget what he did at this particular time, but also just the football that they produced. But how was Mark McGee with you as a kind of man manager at that time?
He was going through that spell. I can't even. It was a blur what was said afterwards. I remember there was a meeting in the centenary when we all went out to look at the strips and the flowers that had been laid, and he had a chat to us then, and it was, as you say, the way he spoke, and it just kind of, I think it would have either made us all crumble or it done the opposite and brought us all together and kind of made us continue with what we were doing. And he was the figurehead of that, him and Leachie. Leachie was brilliant, kind of as assistant, kind of there to kind of get us all going. And it was just, I don't think he needed to say much, because I think we all kind of knew that we wanted to do it for Phil and Phil's memory, like to finish that season the way we finished it, to kind of finish it off for him. I think there wasn't really much needing said from the manager or anything, but the way he went about it certainly helped and certainly like made the whole thing a lot easier, I think, on everyone.
And you mentioned that to go on and achieve a place in the UEFA Cup, that's a perfect tribute, isn't it, in terms of the team continuing on the forum that they had shown and taking that right to the end of the season, finishing in third place, and deservedly so as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we were the third best team that season easily, and it just galvanised us, I think, and it was a horrible, horrible time, because obviously you had Clarkie there, and it was a difficult time, even more so for him than any of us, and the way he conducted himself was kind of inspiring for everybody, the way he could kind of strap on his boots and get on with it and do what he was doing was kind of inspiring for everybody else as well, because it could have broke us, we could have been deflated and we could have kind of rested on it and that could have been the end of it. But I think the way we kind of performed and the way we fought to the end of the season was kind of a marker for what Phil kind of meant to everybody.
I think the other thing that sticks in my mind of that is how emotional, I don't think I've ever been as emotional at a game of football. Was against Hearts at Tynecastle, obviously the Scottish Cup, the first game after the tragedy had happened. I think you say that you can feel the atmosphere at a game, but before the game, I think everybody was ready to burst into tears. It was something that I'll never forget. It was just, obviously, typical Millwall, you go 2-0 down and then Porter scores two goals to come back in. So, I mean, how was it being part of that day?
Well, the change changing room was obviously different. Before the game, it was quieter, and I think everybody was just more concentrating on what they had to do on the park, because it was a big deal to come back to it, and we all done the huddle. I remember that the manager said, because every single one of you's got out, so I was on the bench, and we all went out and we huddled up before the game and showed a kind of sign of kind of solidarity that way. And I think maybe just small things like that that Mark implemented was just small psychological things maybe helped. And but it was obviously a great game football wise when Ports came back and scored their two goals and we got the replay. And but it was a kind of strange feeling before the game. It was quiet, and it was, I think everybody was just concentrating and trying to block out a lot of stuff. Everybody's different, everybody handles grief and that differently, so just concentrating on the game was the biggest thing. There wasn't any speeches required, I don't think, that we needed.
It was just definitely, I mean, I can remember when that second goal went in, and I think I fell down about three flights of stairs right enough. It was great, but I think it was even, I think all the fans could see what it meant to all the players, so I think the squad, that it was amazing. It really was as a fan, so you just must have been proud to be part of that. And I don't know, it was great as a fan in such tragic circumstances.
It brought everybody together, didn't it? I mean, it brought the fans. I think the fans were obviously with us anyway because we were doing so well before it happened. But I think even more so, probably when there was sticky times and in the run-in, that it was all right, because the kind of fans were a bit stuck with us, maybe more than maybe what they would have done before, and it kind of brought the whole place together, and it was kind of fitting in the end. And even the lap one at the end of the season, and we all had the kind of his signature in a strip, and I've still got the strip. I don't think MD's ever given the strip away with Phil's signature on it. And it's something to kind of hold and to remember.
Yeah, absolutely. The second season under Mark McGee, it just didn't really seem to click in the same way. I know players left. There was obviously, as well, the speculation, as there had been before, linking Mark McGee with other jobs. The chat that he got on the plane to go to Lithuania to be interviewed for the Hearts job, he then decided that he wanted to stay put. But it did seem to kind of unsettle the rhythm somewhat, and the team kind of showed that throughout the season. Narrowly missed out in the top six, but it just didn't quite feel the same. It didn't have the same style. It didn't certainly have the same results, and it was maybe a wee bit of a damp squib given how good that first season had been.
Definitely. I mean, obviously that first season it was great football, and then the second, as you said, it was just a wee bit flat, and finishing seventh, like, the worst position as well, because the end of the season means absolutely nothing. You're just playing meaningless games. But it's strange when you're involved in a squad or in a changing room, you don't know what's really affecting performances or what's affecting the play, whether Mark being linked with jobs and maybe leaving did affect us. It's a possibility, but it's not really an excuse for us as players. I think we probably had the players to do better that season, and maybe it was a knock-on from the Europa League stuff, and I don't know. It's really difficult to put your kind of finger on things when it doesn't work out as you hope. When it's football, there's that many different variables. It's impossible.
The European night was great that season, I've got to say. Going away over to France, and it was just phenomenal. That's obviously, I've been away with Scotland, but that trip, obviously, with it being relatively close, if you like, for a European trip, and yeah, it was just brilliant.
Well, Nancy was a great. I started over in Nancy, and it was a brilliant experience, and like families were all going over and everything, and it was brilliant, and the fans seemed to really enjoy it. And I think we thought we had a wee chance, especially after the away tie, but they were a strong side and just proved too much for Ringway. I just proved too much for us in the home tie. I didn't play at home, but I can never think. Mark McGee, I only played games where he needed somebody to run about. He would have wanted ball players. I didn't play, so away from home, I played to run about and work hard. And then when the home tie came around and he needed ball players, I think it was always me or Stephen McGarry. Stephen McGarry would come in and play. So me and him were in constant rotation, depending. I always get Celtic, Rangers away and Blooming, all the hard games like that, and McGarry get the kind of more winnable games.
Feel
like
there was a wee bit of talk, kind of just given that there's not been much football to talk about in the last couple of weeks, but about the penalty save over in France, and it was kind of moments that you celebrated like a goal that weren't a goal. That was quite a moment, wasn't it? I suppose you've gone all that way. We didn't get an away goal, but it kind of felt like an away goal at the time, and maybe that's what gave us that bit of hope that we could go and turn that around at Fir Park.
I think it was. I mean, it was. Their goal, I kind of lost my runner and he crossed it in and he scored and I was gutted. And then you think if we go 2-0 down, it's game over type thing, and Buzz pulled off a great save. I mean, Buzz was brilliant at that spell at Motherwell. I thought, like, in the sticks, he was a character, and he was. But he had day saves in him to pull off worldies, and we needed it at the time. And coming back, he did think we had a chance. I thought we had a chance, but it proved not to be.
Just as Andy said, the penalty save was just it was like a goal. It was as good as a goal. But I think probably the celebrations were possibly down to the fact that folk had been drinking for nearly 3 days solid.
There wasn't much else to celebrate in that game either, so you need to celebrate something.
We made the worst of the trip. I can remember being in the square before the game and seeing a kind of rather intoxicated John Boyle. So he certainly enjoyed himself over there as well.
Oh, quite right. I mean, if you're going over there, you're going, aren't you? And that's what it's all about when you go over as a bunch of fans that go in and make the most of every bit of it.
That's it. It's about the memories, a lack of them, I suppose. But it was certainly, it was really good, and we got a few of them. The following season, going in through the fair play, but again, a new manager at the helm. This one could get quite interesting, as it has done with many previous guests, it must be said. But Jim Gannon certainly had his ideas as to who he liked and who he didn't. And I think it's fair to say, Mark, that you didn't really make his like list, didn't play under Jim Gannon. Did you feel at that point that it could be the end of your Motherwell career?
Definitely. I mean, I was miles out the picture, and just, it was, you know what, they get everybody through was the banter in the changing room, like, because he was an absolute character, him, his assistant Peter, and everything that went with it. We used to, the best bit about the whole day was training afterwards. We had one point in the minibus and we were like, what about when he said this? What about when he said that? And it was like, everybody just took the pit. Even the boys he brought in, even the boys he liked, the English boys. And he found that, I don't think he knew how to handle that, because he made it very much us and them, because he binned off kind of the older Scottish boys. I wasn't old at the time, it just didn't fancy me, which was fine. But he kind of wanted everybody out. He wanted to mould the young boys. And I don't know if you've heard this story about getting the water chucked on him.
Yeah, McGarry told us this.
Just things like that. I mean, it was... And how he was like... Nobody to play the Jim Gannon role. And all this kind of... He would come out with things like that. And he sat us down and watched... We watched AC Milan and Liverpool in the Champions League final. And he slaughtered Kaká all the way through it. Like, he does sitting there, playing for Motherwell, sitting watching Liverpool, AC Milan. I recorded one that had been on, and we video like analyse the game to the way he wanted us to play and slaughtering the, like the best players in the world. It was delusional. So it was. And but know what I'll say about John McGannon and his see tactically and some of the stuff he done, like set pieces and all that, was it was really, really good. But it was just an absolute crackpot. And there's no other way to describe it. And it's not because he didn't like me, it was, you've heard it for everybody else, it was just a crazy time, but it was something that was, even though I wasn't playing, it was hilarious, because boys just used to take the piss, and it was probably one of the better times, they just slotting them in the minibus and the way home and in the change room and things like that. It was crazy.
That's actually what Laz has said, that's also what John Sutton said during the summer, that now that he's, or well, in John Sutton's case, he's kind of moving towards the coaching side of the game, he does see bits of what Jim Gannon did and thinks that he can kind of see why he did it or what he was getting at. Is that the case for yourself as well?
Definitely, I thought at the time, some of the things he'd done, he brought in, that we were still doing a couple of managers later, and he used to do video analysis, but we would do video analysis. We would go upstairs on a Friday at the Centenary, well, the Centenary up the stairs, and we would watch a video for about 2.5 hours on a Friday morning, then go out and train, and we were all absolutely bust, like just knackered watching this video. And but he had good ideas. He just didn't have the management skills. Like the first, one of the first video sessions we done, we sat down and we watched his Stockport team in a playoff final, and it was like cut, so it was like nothing each, and he was like, this is how we're going to play, and he was telling us that we had to play like Stockport, and then he'd cut the video and it'd be like 1-0 down, but you wouldn't have seen them conceding the goal. You'd seen them doing a nice bit of play, and it was just, I think he just got off on a bad foot straight away with the boys with that kind of chat. Just trying to compare us with Stockport County, and it was a strange, strange time.
He came across alright on the scene, kind of interviews and stuff like that. He knew what to say, and my opinion of him was that he, obviously you heard the stories for like for Craggs and some of the guys that he didn't like, but he did come across. Well, maybe I'm in the minority here, but I thought that when he was interviewed, he'd an answer for everything, almost, and I suppose that's maybe how he got the job.
Scott, he wouldn't speak to Sky because they hadn't fixed his Sky dish.
he did speak well, but that's probably, we've came across plenty of people that talk a good game, and he spoke, and that's maybe why he did get the job. I think he wowed, I've heard that he wowed maybe the board with like a PowerPoint presentation and all this kind of stuff, and he done that, and that's how he was so he was kind of given a job. But it just maybe the boys that he did like Ross Forbes done really well under him, and a couple of other boys I'll think differently about him, but just the way he treated everybody else that he didn't like, and even the ones that were in the team. I mean, he said to me once in training, we were doing a possession, and I kind of gave the ball away or something. He went, "Oh, Fitzy, I'm leaving, I've got to waste my time with you." And I remember being absolutely raging. And I think if I'd been a wee bit older, I just walked off and just in the car and went back to the club. But I was kind of still kind of young and naive at the time. And I just think it was just the way he spoke to people and the way he dealt with people just wasn't right.
That's fairly shocking, it must be said. That all being said, I take it was a massive relief then when Jim Gannon did step down and came Craig Brown and Archie Knox, and it seemed to give many players that were completely frozen out a new lease of life at the club, and I guess a second chance to some extent.
Aye, definitely. I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen we were getting the minibus and getting into training, and we'd heard they'd been sacked, and like the bus went mental. Like, it was strange, and it sounds horrendous, but now when you think that somebody's lost their job, you shouldn't be doing doing that, right? But folk were celebrating, making the bus rock, and it was, and you think back as a kind of older person, you think, that's shocking that we've done that, but that's just what happened. And I think MD taking the job after that was only a winner, to be honest.
And those two are obviously completely established characters in the Scottish game, with some amount of pedigree between them. That experience and that know-how, that seemed to directly affect results and performances, and I suppose kind of team spirit and team morale, which you've already mentioned was quite strong anyway, but it was possibly strong for negative reasons, people kind of coming together with a mutual dislike of the manager at the time.
And it was an us and them, because Jim Gannon kind of treated that way the boys that were playing and the boys that weren't. And although we all got on in the changing room, there was that kind of there, whereas Craig Brown and that's not come in with other experience, but it was like simple stuff. Jim Gannon tried to overcomplicate a lot of stuff, and everything was regimented, and you had to be here at this position, you had to be there. And Craig Brown and that came in, and I think we just went to a 4-4-2, and it was simple, and it just suited us better, I think. I don't know if that's when Geno and Laz struck up their partnership in the middle of the park, and kind of never looked back, the two of them together, in the middle of the park. But it was just, they came in, simplified things, everybody respected them. They had the things that were a bit wacky. Craig Brown likes all his superstitions, and everybody needs to look the same, and like, oh, this carry on, if one of the subs has got trousers on, all the subs have trousers on. But everybody respected his ways and his methods, and it worked for us after that kind of mental bombardment of Jim Gannon.
Do you think that was basically it? The players were just emotionally drained by the whole situation?
I think so. I think because I've been in situations like it before, and it was really technical, and he really went into depth with a lot of things, and a lot of times footballers don't need that. They can only take on so much information, and then they just go and play their natural game, and it's about striking the right balance, and he just went so far the other way that it kind of lost boys, and adding to that his kind of nasty personality at times that was never going to work at Motherwell. And then Craig Brown comes in, a kind of totally opposite, nice guy, really nice guy, but has a pedigree that everybody respected and treated everybody like just normal human beings, and just let us play football and just let the boys go and do what they had to do, and it paid off.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you get a knock, or were you out for the last couple of months of the season, that season? I noticed you played kind of in a 3-0 win at Rugby Park, then a 3-0 win at Pittodrie. You played in the game against Accies the next week, and then that was your last appearance of the season.
Aye, that's when I came on. So obviously I hadn't played under Jim Gannon, and then Craig Brown came in, and I kind of worked my way back into the team. And then I started up at Pittodrie, and then was left out. I was on the bench for Hamilton, and I came on, and after about 2 seconds I ripped my hamstring, and get into a bit of bother with it, because the pitch was shocking at the time.
Yeah, that's right.
The physio actually said when he watched it back that he felt as if that had a lot to do with it, because I never had, people like that, like, never warmed up properly and all that, but it wasn't that. I took a kind of dodgy touch, and it kind of got away from me, but my right foot went into a blooming sand dune and got stuck there, and Simon Menson came in and tackled me and took my left leg the other way, and my hamstring ripped, and I had complications coming back from it. So I just broke into the team, and Craig Brown was quite positive, and then that happened, and I was injured. And then the end of that season, I think my contract must have been up for renewal, and they offered me half my wages, and I was injured at the time and trying to come back. And like, I think the club were just, I could understand Craig Brown's way. He said that his hands were tied, but I don't know how much that was lip service. And they found a way just to up my wages by half and I had to accept it. Sorry, 2 seconds, my son's just ran into the room there. And so they kind of half my wages, and I kind of had to, then I needed an operation on my hamstring just in the pre-season, and it took me a wee while to come back into it then as well. So it was just a lot of accumulation of things.
So that would have meant you missed out in the six each game at the end of that season, which was obviously quite something, and it would have obviously been quite a game to be involved in as well.
Well, I was on the bench, so I remember I came back for the season, but my hamstring wasn't right, and I knew it wasn't right, but I'd, because my contract was coming up for renewal, I knew I needed to try and get back, and so I was kind of on the bench. I wasn't fit, I was miles off it, but I was on the bench for that game. So then that game was just a celebration, celebrating a goal, celebrating a draw. It's unbelievable, but the goal was just out of this world.
I have to be honest and say I was one of the ones that left. I remember driving up the road, and I've got to be honest again and say that I remember, I'm thinking to myself, right, it's only going to be a draw, and I remember we missed the penalty, and I can remember being in the car and thinking to myself, do I really want them to score the penalty, because I'm going to be one of these guys that's had to kid on and was at the game. I remember a wee tiny bit of me thinking, oh, they've missed it. I can remember getting into the house and putting the telly on and we'd scored, but obviously I did celebrate. But so that's my honesty out there. I was one of the, I think it was a 6-2, I was like, I've had enough, I'm away.
See, but honest, in a midweek game, you wouldn't really slaughter Andy for that midweek game, getting beat 6-2 at home. You know, just what he got the road a bit earlier, but aye, it was.
Because it's fair for the St Mirren game recently, we're getting beat 4-1, and I could have easily went up the road then, but I stayed and had a wee feeling, so it's taught me a valuable lesson.
You've learnt your lesson, aye.
Kind of wish I had left that game at 4-1, to be perfectly honest, but there we go. All this is, as you said, Mark, you took a contract in reduced terms. You would leave the club in the January and headed north to join Ross County. A bit of a disappointing end to your Motherwell career, but it's one that, as we've already established over the last 50 minutes or so, that there's so many highs. There's obviously a few lows in among there, but it seems like there's more highs than there were lows.
I think obviously at the start of my career, there was a lot more highs than kind of towards the end, that kind of stagnated a wee bit. And I mean, Stuart McCall, it was just a lot of circumstances that happened with a lot of things. It was circumstance, got injured, had to reduce terms, and then Craig Brown left after saying that he would try and get me back to what I was. And when he left, Stuart McCall came in, and Stuart McCall actually liked me, and I played against Dundee at Dens Park in the cup, and my contract expired. We were in training and we were doing shape for Dundee United at Tannadice, and my contract expired the next day, and he was like, right, Fitz is in the team, and if he doesn't sign a new contract, Roscoe, you're in the team. And we done shape that way, and he kind of wanted me to stay, but I kind of felt like I needed to go away and like establish myself somewhere else. And I don't know if I ever got out that at Motherwell, being the feeling like the kind of young boy trying to break in. I never really felt like an established first team player, and I think getting away was kind of the best thing for my career, like mentally thinking about going to Ross County and being wanted as a first team player and a first team regular. But then they got to the Scottish Cup final that year, and I think Hammy played left the midfield, and I think to this day, I would have played there. Do you know what I mean? Like, that would have been, I'd probably got a chance to play. Because Stuart McCall, when I left, was like, told me, and he was brilliant. I only dealt with him very briefly, but he was brilliant. He was the only one that kind of spoke to me, like, properly and says, know what, I like that you can stop your opponent playing, and I like how hard you work and all that. You need to get better in the ball. Which I knew, but see, just to your manager saying that was. So I knew when I seen Hammy playing that position in that final, I thought that would have been my spot, and regretted that, but fuck, these things happen, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, were you coming in there, Scott?
That final, I think you probably would have played, and I think maybe Stuart McCall was trying to end it, done, thought Stevie Hamill could have done that. But as you say, you never know what could have happened. And sure that, do you have regrets then about leaving Mullerow? Or do you think it was the right move? Or?
I think it was the right move for me, because I think mentally my kind of confidence had been shot a wee bit. I always felt like, even when I played a couple of games, I'd done all right, but I never played for like 15 games in the bounce, and things just, I was just wasn't dealing with like people, like the fans maybe getting on my back and things like that. I didn't get over that, and I felt that I needed to get away. I regret, because I stay in Mullerow, and like my son's a Mullerow fan, mad Mullerow fan, and we get into the games, and I regret maybe no sticking it out a bit longer to see where it maybe took, what would maybe happen. But I think at the time, I don't regret kind of moving on for the sake of my career and the sake of my kind of how I felt about football at the time.
That's an interesting point that you've just brought up there, and I appreciate we're going on a wee bit here, but in terms of the fans, I think football fans, by their nature, that they quite often have a target or a couple of targets, and maybe there was a stage where you came in for some quite unwarranted criticism. That must be very difficult for you personally, but also for your family and the crowd as well. Does that start to affect you when you're kind of almost bringing your job home?
Definitely. I mean, like, it was new to him. Like, my mum and dad would go to every game, and my mum would read the forums, and I wouldn't read them. I would stay off them, but my mum would read and maybe like feedback a wee bit, and that kind of bothered me, and it kind of stuck with me. And then just, I knew I wasn't like light. I've kind of never really been the most liked, like, throughout my career by fans. I don't think a lot of fans appreciate what I kind of brought to a team, because I wasn't kind of fancy, I wasn't great in the ball and didn't score a lot of goals. But I think managers and my teammates kind of knew what I could bring to the game. And but at that age and going through that when I was young, I just don't think I handled it. I didn't build up a resilience to it at all. And it definitely affected me. I mean, there was times where on the park I just thought, no, this is brutal. Do you know what I mean? And didn't want to be there. And that's not what you play football for. Do you know what I mean? But that's the kind of reality of it. It's no easy. And when you're kind of targeted by the fans, it takes a lot. It takes a lot from the individual to kind of overcome it.
And I've seen you sitting in the main stand at Fir Park, watching games with your wee boy in recent seasons. What do you see kind of that happening, and do you feel that that's something that the players need to almost be kind of taught how to deal with? Because it must be an incredibly difficult thing. And of course, fans are entitled to their opinions. That's the whole reason we do this podcast, I suppose. But at the same time, there's got to be an element of reality there and kind of support. You're a supporter first and foremost.
I think so. I think you get ones where, I mean, when I sit and watch games, it's the worst bit about going to games is listening to some people, and it's the same for everybody. Everybody's got it. These idiots that talk a lot of rubbish, and like, some people will not see any good in Emdy, so they'll just only ever see if something happens bad, or if they don't do something they don't think's right, they get absolutely slaughtered for it. And you just think, you're that blinded by the thought that you don't think he's a good player, that it doesn't matter what he does, you're always going to think it. And players, I don't know how you could ever, like, I don't know how you could ever, like, train players to feel like, to deal with that, to cope with that, because it's a lonely thing if you're getting the one that's kind of the majority of the crowd's kind of on their back. It can be a lonely thing, because other boys don't really care, because it's not them. Do you know what I mean? Everybody wants to be the one that's getting the song sung about them and all that carry on. But I think it's when I go and watch games, I feel I need to kind of bite my lip a wee bit before saying things to people, because you just get the ones that, no matter what people do, they they'll get absolutely slaughtered. And it's the ones I just always think, it's the ones that are, like, I always felt like I'd gave 100% in games, and but people don't see that if they don't, if they don't think you're any good anyway. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, I'll tell you a story about, I totally agree, sometimes you did get a raw deal, and there was one guy in particular that sat in front of me, that for whatever reason, you could do no right for a wee while, and it was in the build up taking a bit of nonce, and me, I think it was about 10 years, my brother-in-law Stuart and a few others that sat together, and we were in a pub in Paris, and lo and behold, it wasn't just Joe, it was a total boo boy, but you were the name that we picked, and we had a whole pub in France. I think even French people were joining in singing. There's only one Matt Fitzpatrick just to annoy him ever since then. He never gave you a hard time.
But then why? Because he knew he was going to get battered.
Waiting on the train to take us from Paris to Nancy, was singing There's Only One Matt Fitzpatrick for a period of time. So there you go, there was a song sang about you.
Oh, well, there you go. I'm quite happy now, do you know what I mean?
This has been well worth an hour of your time now.
That's all I wanted
was
my old fans to sing my names, and it happens, so I'm quite happy.
We'll just quickly bring it up to date. You obviously obtained promotion with Ross County. You had a season at Morton before a long spell with our Lanarkshire rivals Airdrie, and you would actually go on to captain Airdrie, assisted Ian Murray as well in recent times. What is it you're doing with yourself just now?
I'm not doing anything in football now. I left there, I think it was kind of October, November time, and I've not went into anything else. I just done my A licence in the summer, so it's maybe something I'll get back into soon. I think a lot happened at Airdrie. It was a wild time to be involved in that club, and it kind of took a lot out of me, and obviously having to retire because of my knee, and then moving into the coaching staff, and then getting walking away from that and coming away from that, it took a lot out of me. So I've kind of took a wee bit of time out, and also now everybody's taking a wee bit of time out, so I've just wait and see what kind of comes up. But hopefully maybe one day I'll get back into kind of coaching. I enjoyed it, and see where it comes, see what comes out.
Do you still have quite close connections with the likes of the Keith Lasley, Stevie Hamill, that obviously now have went on to do well in the coaching side of it, David Clarkson as well. These guys played with you, obviously, so is there a link there?
I don't talk to them on a regular basis or anything like that. There's obviously a link there, and Hammy did contact me before I had my A licence and asked me what I was doing about coaching, about the academy at Motherwell, but he needed somebody with an A licence on. I had my B, and I was at Airdrie, and I was still maybe going to be playing and things, so it wasn't working out that way. So so I don't know if that would ever be something. But I still, I kind of text Laz. I use Laz for the tickets, you know what I mean? I text Laz and get the tickets for the games for me and Ethan, and so kind of talk to him a wee bit. But either of the boys still get the connection there, but I don't really speak to them all that regularly.
It would certainly be good to see you back, mate, and I'd like to take the chance to thank you for your time tonight. I know it's kind of hard to pass the time at this moment in time, but it's been really enjoyable.
I've really enjoyed it, and thanks very much for having me on. It's brilliant.
Thanks, Mark. I've really enjoyed it. It's been great speaking to you, particularly about insight into the kind of Phil O'Donnell side of things, but in a more positive light, just reminiscing about that goal, even though I've got the goosebumps even thinking about it, so thanks for that.
No, brilliant, any time, it was great.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back in the next couple of days. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Can I take your order, please? Gotta make the time to see, I'll be home and let it be. Take a step outside.
Gonna make the time to see I'll be on the ready, won't ya? Step back.